It is Sunday morning, and what we love to do on Sundays is sit back and look at some of the great baseball books that are out and some of the ones that I know you'd be interested in. Father's Day coming up, Mother's Day coming up, and some of these are really outstanding. And I ran into a very good one. It's called Billy Martin. Of course, out here we know Billy Martin. He grew up in Berkeley, one of the great players of Northern California, the Yankee Clipper himself. Used to take him around. Of course, Joe DiMaggio and Billy Martin were friends way back when. But it's a great story about a Northern California guy who made it in New York as a manager, maybe a Hall of Famer someday. So the book is called Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius, and I think has a lot of interest for folks out here. It's written by Bill Pennington. Bill is an award-winning sports writer for the New York Times, a former syndicated columnist. He's been a beat writer who covered much of Billy Martin's tenure with the Yankees. So he has that aspect that he brings to the book. So, Bill, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, very glad to have you on. It's one of those books, you know, you pick up and you start reading it and baseball comes alive to you. You covered Billy Martin. What was it like to cover him and then talk to so many people and put it into print?
Well, I mean, I never met anybody like Billy Martin, which is part of the reason that I ended up writing the book. But, I mean, I think covering him was exactly sort of as you might expect. It was, you had to stand your toes. He made it interesting. He had a lot of energy. His teams were extremely entertaining. And so it was really a lot of fun. And I happened to get along with him well. I mean, it's funny. My first year, full year being around him was in 1985. And, you know, that season started with Yogi Berra as manager. And then after 16 games, it was switched to Billy. And I was, you know, like, wow, I didn't sign up for this. It's going to be a whole different deal if Billy's the manager instead of Yogi. He turned out to be very, you know, good to me. He pulled me aside and said, okay, look, you know, you're kind of new here and I'm starting new. You know, if you're square with me, I'll be square with you. And, I pretty much got along with him all that time, all the time I covered it. I mean, it was always, you know, there was a lot going on. It was a chaotic time. You know, it wasn't like covering any other manager, but I didn't have any issues with him.
What kind of a manager was Billy Martin? And I say it this way, you know, we always look, Leonard Coppett taught me about the managerial trees. And you go to McGraw, you go to Casey Stengel, then to, you know, DeRocher's in there. And Billy Martin is part of that progeny of managers that go back to McGraw. But, you know, today we scrutinize managers so carefully and they're all over the place. We didn't really do that back in the 80s or during Martin's tenure. What kind of a manager of men was Billy Martin? What kind of a game manager was he?
Well, it's interesting that you brought up McGraw because he really could trace Billy's lineage to McGraw, too, because Casey Stengel, who was, you know, another California, who was Billy's, you know, mentor in many ways, was his baseball father, played for McGraw and learned a lot of his, you know, ways about baseball from McGraw. So McGraw influences Stengel, Stengel influences Martin, you know, Martin influences Buck Showalter. I mean, it just keeps going. You know, so it's interesting you brought that up.
Yeah, so what kind of a game manager? Now, McGraw, of course, you know, as the game was figured out about 100 years ago, they figured out how to play the game and, you know, they could hit and run, they could do a million things. And McGraw was one of those guys that just never gave the opposition an inch, as tough as can be. Christy Mathewson lived with him. He had that side of him as well. Billy Martin got into fights with players. He got into fights with umpires. What was Billy Martin really like running a game? How did he run a game?
It was very intense. He almost never sat down in the dugout, maybe between innings a little bit. But if anything was going on, he was always standing up, hands in his back pocket, pacing back and forth, yelling out onto the field, yelling to the umpires, yelling at the other manager, turning around, yelling at his team. You see that? You see what just happened? The shortstop's dipping off the pitches. This guy's, you know, left fielder's too deep, right fielder's too shallow. If you get up there, let's try and do this. You know, look for this opportunity. He was, you know, highly aggressive. I mean, you know, double steals were, you know, double, triple steals. I mean, I mean, when have you ever seen a base floated and all three guys run on the pitch? But Billy would do that because he wanted to create such indecision in the opposition. He wanted them to be so worried about what he was going to do next. And he succeeded. I mean, they definitely, teams played scared against Billy. And plus, his own players felt this energy And it was fun playing for him. Now, granted, he obviously didn't get along with all his players and had some, some really notable explosive interactions with them, because he was just the kind of guy that wasn't going to back down. I mean, if you talked to the press about him, or he would respond in kind. If you pushed in any way, figuratively or literally, he was going to push probably twice as hard. So, he had some issues with players, but in doing all the research I did, I mean, it took almost 3 years to write this book. The majority of the people that played for him liked playing for him. And I would say that is probably as much as 3/4 of all the people, which is pretty good when you know that on any given team, you got 5, 6, 7 guys who aren't playing. They don't like you anyway.
That's true. Well, they always said, of the 25 players, 10 will like you, 10 won't like you, but keep the other 5 away from the ones who don't like you, and you'll do fine.
Yeah.
But Billy Martin, baseball's flawed genius, Bill Pennington, Penington, is the author. You can tell it's an excellent book. Alcohol was a big part of his life and fueled a lot of the incidents that he got into on the field, off the field. There's always some part of that after the game as well. Is Billy Martin a Hall of Fame manager? And if he is, why isn't he in there? And what do you think his future will be as far as his legacy?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious why he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's not in the Hall of Fame because, especially in the last 25 years since he died, this image has grown up of him just being this dirt-kicking lunatic who got hired and fired a lot, which is one of the motivations for me to write the book. I didn't like the fact that he was being put in this corner, this sort of awful, cartoonish character. I mean, he was so, brilliant as a manager, and he was so fascinating. I didn't like seeing him, as I said, put off as this caricature. So I think that's why he hasn't gotten the votes. Because if you look at, and he should get more consideration for the Hall of Fame, because if you look at his stats, he absolutely belongs. I mean, he has a better winning percentage than 13 managers that are now in the Hall of Fame, including Tony La Russa, including Joe Torre, including Casey Stengel and Sparky Anderson. And he took over every time. He took over a lousy team. So consider how hard it is to have that good winning percentage. He won as many championships as many other managers who were in the Hall of Fame. He had a remarkable record. And so if it were just that, I think he would be in. And there are people like La Russa and Bobby Cox, who are trying to get Billy in. Earl Weaver, before he died, I talked with him, and he was hoping to help try and get Billy in, even though they were arch rivals. And we'll see how the La Russa Cox movement works, on the Veterans Committee.
Yeah, be interesting. Alcohol, as I say, was a big part of course, his death. And, it sort of followed him around some of the off-field fights, Dave Boswell in a bar and, things like that. But you think back to Joe McCarthy, alcohol is a big part of his life, the great Yankee Hall of Fame manager, Billy Southworth. I mean, it's been a part of baseball, and for some reason he got into the tail end of sort of his acceptability, and in a world today it's not acceptable, and I think he gets caught into that.
Yeah, no, obviously. I mean, it's funny. I talked with his widow, Jill, and who hadn't talked in 25 years, but I coaxed her into talking. And she said that in the last, year of his life, they had had conversations about him seeking help. And she talked about how if he had been born, 15, 20 years later, it might have been an entirely different story, because 15, 20 years later, it was much more acceptable to seek help or to go into rehab and that kind of thing. And she thinks that he would have. She thinks he might have anyway if he hadn't died. But in particular, to be born 20 years later, his story might have been different. It was different then. I talked to player after player, executive after executive. I said, "Did you ever talk to him about his drinking?" And everyone said no. It just wasn't even brought up. He was a man of a different time. He was raised. He did come of age in the 1950s, which we've watched. If you watched even one episode of Mad Men, it's like that the 50s were marinated in alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Well, I love the book. Of course, we have the Bay Area connection, Berkeley, opening a restaurant in El Cerrito, coming back to the Bay Area to see his mother all the time. And what can you tell us that maybe you learned about him and his Bay Area roots?
Well, he never lost them, and he constantly talked about going back and permanently. And even the last month of his life, his mother had died just before he died, and he went back to the funeral And he was telling people there that he was coming back, that he was going to move, or at least move for part of the time and live back in California. That was always his sort of plan. It was kind of a lifelong plan. And he did it when he managed the A's, which, you know, many of people close to him wish he had stayed at the A's, you know, for, you know, finished his career there. I think maybe things might have been different, not just for the A's, but for him. So, no, his roots were really strong. There was controversy over why he should be buried in New York and not California. He ended up being buried in New York, but there was controversy over that. So, no, he never left his roots, I don't think, and I don't think Berkeley ever left him in many, many ways.
No, he was a tough kid from West Berkeley. Bill Pennington is with us. Billy Martin, Baseball's Flawed Genius, is the book. I highly recommend it. It is good. And I grew up in that era as well, so I just pick it up and I can, you know, see the names and feel the stories. But what about Billy Martin, the ball player? I mean, he broke the Brooklyn Dodgers' heart in, what, the 53, I think, World Series with 12 hits and made the great catch on Jackie Robinson's pop-up. He got traded from the Yankees to Kansas City after the Copacabana incident where Mantle and Bauer got into beefs with Whitey Ford and with people in the Copacabana. So what was Billy like as a ball player?
He was one of the best World Series players, you know, maybe ever. I mean, you know, it sounds like hyperbole, but, I mean, let's just put it this way. He had a slugging percentage in the World Series of .566. Okay, well, that sounds high, but what does that mean? Well, Mickey Mantle's slugging percentage was 21 points lower. I mean, that's a pretty good World Series player, but Billy Martin actually hit more doubles, triples, and home runs, you know, percentage-wise, you know, accumulated that higher percentage than Mickey did. He was a terrific World Series player. The only time, you know, I mean, when he was traded, they lost in 57, the Yankees did. And people, I read the papers from back then, they were all blaming the fact that Billy Martin wasn't there to sort of run the team and run the infield and steal signs and do all the things that he brought to that very talented team, but needed, you know, he was the unofficial leader, really. I mean, that was, Mantle was quiet, you know, even DiMaggio when he was there was quiet, but Billy wasn't. And so he was a terrific player. I mean, it's like you mentioned all the places he was and things he did. I mean, it's a remarkable 61 years. I would be going through the archives, and there's pictures of Billy with Frank Sinatra and Billy with Lucille Ball and Jackie Gleason. And it just was an entirely different, you know, situation. And he, you know, he just was a special guy and saw a lot in those 61 years.
Boy, very good. Bill Pennington with us. Billy Martin, the Baseball's Flawed Genius, is the book. Bill, one last thought for you. Did you learn anything shocking that you didn't know? And, of course, you covered him, and a lot of the stories were public over his whole life. Did you come up with anything and say, wow, I didn't know that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few things. And one was how sort of evolving he was, how much he, you know, his core principles didn't change, but he did change from decade to decade, you know. So, for example, in the 1960s, he's living in a Minnesota suburb. He's a coach and then the manager of the Twins, but he lived literally in a house with a white picket fence out front and a garden in the back, and he spent most of his days, he wasn't drinking at all, and he spent a lot of his days, you know, sitting in the living room by the fire, you know, smoking a pipe and reading Civil War books. You know, I didn't picture that Billy Martin, but there were a lot of Billy Martins. That's just it. He's not an easy guy to pin down. He changed.
Right. Well, great to have you with us. Charlie Silvera is a good friend of ours, and we see him all the time in San Francisco at the games. And, of course, he was a longtime friend and coach for Billy. And, of course, as Billy would get fired all the time, Charlie tells a story that the owner would call Billy in at noon and fire Billy, and Charlie was fired at 12:05. And that's that's the way it worked. But he loved Billy and worked with him quite a bit, and I've heard a lot of the Billy stories from Charlie. But the book is really good. I'm sure you've gotten a lot of good reviews on it, and I recommend it, and I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure. Yeah, it's been doing well. It seems to be being received well, and I'm happy for that because it took about 3 years out of my life, and I'm happy for Billy too, or the image of Billy, because I think it needs some sort of redefining. Mm-hmm. His legacy needs a little redefining.
Yeah, comes at the right time. Bill, thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that is Bill Pennington. Raph, we'll have that on the website, and you'll be able to hear it on our replay tonight as well, and that's one you want to hear again.